Good afternoon, everyone. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFR.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, and I'd just like to send an Open Sources shout-out right off the top to Rick, who came and saw me at the Hillside broadcast tent on the weekend. It's nice to meet you, Rick. It sounds like he's listened to us since before this show.
He remembers when we found the Black Rock in the middle of the jungle.
Oh my goodness.
That's a lost reference.
That's right. The glacier retreated and he started listening to us. Wow.
Good times.
Anyway, nice to meet you, Rick.
Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of the screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. We're just so excited about today's topics.
Oh my goodness.
So today we're going to talk about the cabinet shuffle in Ottawa yesterday. Many MPs took a break from their summer vacation to make it out to Rideau Hall to get new marching orders. So we'll talk about who stayed in cabinet, who joined cabinet, maybe who left cabinet, and we'll talk about all that. And then the official campaign period for the BC referendum on electoral reform has begun, and we'll talk about the options and whether or not this will be the one to succeed where the others have failed. And then finally, we'll talk about municipal election in October, whether or not anyone's going to run against Mayor Cam Guthrie and what that means for local democracy. Speaking of democracy, our first topic today... Donald met Vlad in Helsinki on Monday, and the sparks flew, which is why most of the free world, including people in the U.S., look like they've been electrocuted all week, because it's just been non-freaking-stop since Monday around the lunch hour. And I watched the whole thing live, and I can't say I was surprised by any of it, because it was very much in keeping with Donald's... I like David K. Johnson, how he always calls him Donald, so I think I'm going to do that.
Donald's?
Donald.
Donald.
Yeah, yeah, David K. Johnson's written about Donald Trump for years.
Like Uncle Donald, or just...
Yeah, so when he's appearing on TV talking about Donald Trump, you just call him Donald, and he does it because somebody asked him about it. No, not the, he just says Donald, like he knows him. And somebody asked him, like, why do you call him Donald instead of, you know, the president or Trump? And he's like, well, I'm not going to use, you know, formal... language for people I've known about and written about, because, you know, it's like I know them, so I just call them Donald. So let's do that. Yeah, so Donald did not distinguish himself well. Even hardcore Republican supporters were aghast, and not just, you know, the people who like to look like they're concerned, like Jeff Flake and Bob Corker, but... yeah, it did not look good that Donald Trump gets up in front of the whole world and says, you know, not only do I, A, believe Putin that the Russians didn't hack, but Putin has offered to help us investigate. And so, you know, I'm thinking seriously about taking him up on that offer, which has, like, a lot of some key people in the United States blanking bricks, because that part of that exchange is Vladimir Putin wants to investigate, you know, some Americans he doesn't like for trumped-up charges that even Interpol says are... fake news. So, I mean, that's in brief.
Yeah, so much to condense into 10 minutes. But yeah, well, what you were saying about the other Republicans, John McCain called Trump's behavior disgraceful. Ex-CIA Director John Brennan called it treasonous, which is, you know, I think the descriptors are getting more severe as go along. And of course, a whole ton of other Republicans said that the whole summit was a mistake.
Yeah,
and it's quite possible that it was. And then, of course, we spent the rest of the week backtracking. The double negative has re-entered the... I did not say that. And trying to explain and backtrack and explain himself, I guess, because Putin isn't standing beside him now. He can just say whatever. I mean, he did the same thing with Kim Jong-un. I think he does it with everybody. Theresa May. It's like he leaves the fold and the, you know, the public... Q&A, and then it just becomes something different. And I a lot of it is, I honestly, and this is my opinion, I kind of agree with the people, is that he doesn't remember. He just says whatever. He's one of those guys, just say, what, you're gonna get off my case, I'm just gonna say stuff. Because you know when he's reading comments, you know when he's reading something that's been handed to him, and you know when he's freewheeling, and he freewheels a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And I think they must all, the whole team must just cringe. I mean, some of the looks on the faces of the people in Helsinki of his team, he's just like, what? What? But they have to hold back, though, because he is the president, right? So they can't really do too much.
Yeah, it's... I forget where I was going with that, but, you know, some of the people who are speaking, like Brennan, I mean, Brennan's not exactly, like, a loony lefty. You know, he's not exactly a Bernie bro. So, you know, it's kind of shocking.
The criticism's coming from inside the house.
Right.
Pretty much.
I think the scary part is that he did it after the Friday, a week from tomorrow, the indictment of 12 Russians. I think there was something like, you know, there were several charges, but Robert Mueller identified several key Russians who were involved in this and then provided the evidence. So, and then that happened with the Chris Wallace interview. Chris Wallace of Fox News, by the way, Chris Wallace hands Donald Vladimir Putin. So it's like, hey, here's the indictment. You want to read it and respond to it? And Putin's like, no, that's okay. You know, because... Of course,
I'm very busy.
Putin knows what's inside it, but I mean, still, the fact that it fell upon Chris Wallace to have to do this, and there's really no indication that Donald Trump did it at all. And it was clearly the timing of it was not a coincidence. Mueller, who's very apolitical in terms of how he's been prosecuting this, it was a very political move that was almost a dare. You can read it as a dare that Mueller was like, I dare you to bring this up to Putin.
And Chris Wallace turned it up a bit. I was able to watch more this week because I was actually off sick. Can you tell? and he asked Putin point blank. He said, why do all of your opponents end up dead?
Yeah, that was startling.
That's gutsy, man. Like, yeah. You're letting it happen here. And it's surprising for... I guess, who knows, maybe Trump suggested to Putin, it's like, you know, you should probably sit down with Fox News, they're okay.
Yeah.
Or the rest of the network.
Well, Rupert Murdoch, whoever. Like, I'm sure Putin knows, anyone who reads Donald Trump's Twitter feed knows that he clearly prefers one news network.
Oh, absolutely.
Of all others. What was surprising, you know, Hannity and Carlson were in the neighborhood, but it was Chris Wallace who got the gig.
Mm. He won't again. After that, there's no way you ought to cut that.
But no, it's startling because, I mean, the people who Vladimir Putin has talked about wanting to talk to or having his people question, Bill Browder, who is a businessman who is mostly responsible for the Magnitsky Act, which is the 2012 sanctions that got Putin all... flustered in the first place about the West because of Magnitsky, Sergei Magnitsky, who mysteriously died in prison and was Bill Browder's sort of Russian front man. Not that I'm implying anything negative, but, you know, Browder had business in Russia and Magnitsky was sort of fronting for him. And then the other person is Michael McFaul, who was the U.S. ambassador to Russia under Barack Obama, who met with people who are politically opposed to Vladimir Putin. And of course, that's a big no-no because the only legitimate opposition for Vladimir Putin is the opposition he names, like in presidential elections when he rigs it. Like, I choose this person who'll be my opponent.
News presenter that ran.
But these guys have to be scared witless because not only did Trump come out and go, yeah, I think that's a pretty good idea to to let them, question the people they're interested in. Of course, Putin also alleged that Browder gave money he made in Russia and didn't pay tax on and gave it to Hillary Clinton, which of course is a trigger word. Hillary Clinton is a trigger word for Donald Trump.
Yeah,
so of course, after you say Hillary Clinton, he's going to believe anything. But these guys have to be scared because the White House, the State Department spokeswoman said affirmatively, like, we're clearly not going to be turning American citizens over to the Russians to be questioned. But Sarah Huckabee Sanders gets up and says, oh, we're talking about it. And if you're Bill Browder and Michael McFaul, you got to be thinking, there's no way in hell I'm getting on a plane to Russia because no one will ever see me again.
Yeah.
They're going to get in an accident. accident somewhere between the United States and Russia. They're going to get in an accident. And, you know,
and considering what's been going on in the UK.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
allegedly the Russians.
Now that's kind of the breaking news from that.
I didn't see that.
I only saw the headline, but
are their names Russian by any chance?
I didn't see that much. I just that happened, and we'd have to follow up on that. But
and speaking of cloak and dagger stuff, mentioned about Maria Butina, the alleged spy, founder of an organization called the Right to Bear Arms.
Yeah, Russia.
They're in Russia. They tout themselves as being the Russian NRA. She appeared in the U.S. And has been charged with being a Russian agent. Now, she says she started off as weird. She's like a furniture broker or something from Siberia. Then she became a student. But I think the thing to look for with Russian women spies is the red hair. You remember Anna Chapman?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just weird that they both have this dyed red hair. It's like I shouldn't say it, but like a Russian woman starts to infiltrate and she's got like dyed red hair. It's like, yep, she's the spy. No, you can't really say that. But
well, I mean, there's a reason why Black Widow's a redhead in the comics and in the movie.
I actually thought she looked like Jenny Weasley, the spy, but I mean, that's not fair.
She does look like Jenny Weasley. She does look like the actress.
I'm like,
Bonnie Wright. Yeah.
No, you know her real name. There you go.
I know her real name.
A true story. Yeah. Next on end credits. People who look like spy.
Yeah, that sounds like a good segment.
Daniel Craig, he must be a good guy.
Yeah, it is fascinating. She kind of comes out of nowhere, and then she's like, you know, kind of hanging out in the conservative establishment. So things like CPAC, things like the NRA. What's weird is that if you know anything about Russian gun laws, you have to have a permit to own a gun in Russia.
It's very strict
because obviously if you're living in a totalitarian regime, you don't want average, everyday, regular people walking around with firearms.
But also post-totalitarian regime, well, I guess it still is sort of, but they don't trust, anyone. No one trusts anybody in Russia, right? It's like, oh, we can't give everybody kills. We just shoot everybody.
So it's insane to begin with, but because she's a pretty face and a young female, she manages to get into all these exclusive clubs with the older, wealthy, white, conservative guys who will apparently chase anything in a skirt. So, I mean, and that's what's being alleged
here. The old-fashioned honey trap, pretty much.
Honey pot, right? Yeah. And that's, I saw somebody on MSNBC last night.
So I don't
want
to sound sexist, but that's...
It's a legit thing. It's a legit thing. Like
Come on, sit down here, darling.
Tell us about that Jennifer Lawrence movie that came out a couple months ago, Red Sparrow. That's an actual thing. Like, it's not exactly... Like, it's
and don't tell me. She had dyed red hair, right?
Yeah. No, she didn't in the movie.
No, she didn't. I didn't see it.
She had dirty blonde hair like Jennifer Lawrence already does, but... There was a guy on MSNBC last night who's a security expert. I think he was a former agent, but he said, like, this is what Russia does. She was probably a prostitute. And again, we're not, like, being sexist.
No, that's how it works.
But that is, like, they recruited her for the purposes of luring dumb men in and trading sex for influence, and that seems to be what she was doing. And she was she had an American boyfriend who his name was Paul Erickson, who's kind of a shady figure in his own right, because he's been involved with like Pat Buchanan's presidential campaign, and he worked with Lorena Bobbitt's husband when he was running for office. He's been involved with like African politicians, and like he said, this is like really bizarre history, but it seemed like he was kind of set up as her like American contact. And then she was there was like emails going around, a part of the evidence against her, that she was getting sick of him and she wanted to move on,
move on then, right? It's like,
well,
she wanted to move on with the mission, right?
Go up to the next level. And I think that was the concern with why she was busted. She's the only Russian agent that's like been anywhere near this that is in custody, and that's why. And this didn't come from the special prosecutor's office either, by the way. This is an independent thing, which makes you wonder like how many Russian agents might be running around in these circles. But she was highly visible, and there was concern that, you know, she could get on a plane and be off to Russia and never be seen again. So what they have her on charges of conspiracy and not registering as a foreign agent right now, which are pretty light charges, but Malcolm Nance, who's also a security expert, says because they're building the espionage case against her too.
And maybe because she was rolling with the NRA, it, you know, gave her a bit of
right, leeway. Which also is heavily connected to Russian money. Russians dumped a lot of money into the NRA, who in turn dumped a lot of money into fronting for Donald Trump in the 2016 election.
So it seems to all be lining up.
Yeah.
More to come on that one for sure.
Well, I'm sure there's been more to come in the last 16 minutes we've been talking about it.
Can you get off the air and it's like, Trump has been impeached. What?
I doubt it, but it would be awesome. Anyway, looking to you more Canada stuff, there was a cabinet shuffle, the worst kept secret
in
federal politics. I was watching the news Monday morning, and it's like, oh, there's going to be a cabinet shuffle. And then Tuesday, they're like, they're talking to Justin Trudeau. So what about this cabinet shuffle? He's like, I don't know. Something might happen.
Oh,
but then,
please.
Of course, Wednesday, everyone's at Rideau Hall. It wasn't big because a lot of the big portfolios like foreign minister and finance minister didn't really change hands that much. But there were some significant moves. I think the biggest one is Bill Blair.
Oh, yeah.
Which is...
That's huge.
The timing is striking because of who is presently the Premier of Ontario.
It doesn't sound huge. The new title is, what is it? Border Security and Organized
Minister of Border Security
crime
and
reduction.
Crime Reduction.
And that's a new portfolio, right?
It's a new portfolio.
For people that don't know, Doug Ford hates Bill Blair. He doesn't just dislike him. He hates him. And you can just Google it a little bit. Just put in Doug Ford, Bill Blair, and you'll see... Doug Ford's reaction to Bill Blair is almost irrational when he just is
threatened to sue him.
Yes. And all of it stemmed from the situation in Toronto when Bill Blair was still on the police force. And the video came out, which we covered quite a bit, of Doug Ford allegedly smoking crack. And it turned
you mean
out
Rob Ford? Doug
yes.
Ford didn't smoke crack.
Doug Ford defending his brother, Rob.
Yeah.
We'll never, ever get it right. It's like Elizabeth and Theresa May. Anyway, the Fords were PO'd that, and it seemed that Bill Blair not only had overstepped in Doug Ford's view, but also he dropped his own opinion into it, saying that he was disappointed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So all this led to some really bad blood, and Doug Ford actually had to apologize. I think legally he had to apologize because of some of the things he said, and he did this mm-hmm. reluctant apology. I know this has nothing to do with the cabinet shuffle, but I find it really interesting.
Well, it does have something to do with the cabinet
yes,
shuffle.
Yes, because this is Justin Trudeau saying, ha ha, like to Doug Ford. It's like, I'm going to set this up. Because what's one of Doug Ford's big things is law and order, and they're letting too many in is his mentality, right? So Bill Blair is now the person in charge of that.
Well, this was a twofer because Bill Blair's been the one who's been marshalling the marijuana legalization in Parliament. He's been the point person on that, and that wasn't a cabinet level job. That was just something he was taking on due to his presumably his background as a police chief. So this was, considering that the marijuana legalization, even though it hasn't technically happened yet, it's like kind of the one big successful thing that the federal government has accomplished. So it's kind of a reward that way. Like, we're going to give you this big new important portfolio that does address like what's going to be a key issue going forward. And I think Justin Trudeau himself said that, you know, it was creating a minister of border security was to address the fear mongering. Is being a lot of the dog whistle stuff.
AKA they're letting too many in, which seems to be the line. Yeah.
But I mean, it's also, it can easily be read as an FU to Doug Ford, who in his first week in office said that, you know, Ontario's not going to do anything with these people, these illegal border crossers. That's all federal jurisdiction. Don't look at Ontario. We're going to passing the buck there. So,
need to pay for all of them because taxpayers.
Right. So, like, on a critical issue that there's already been friction, it seems like Justin Trudeau's throwing some catnip in there by putting Doug Ford up against his original enemy, Bill Blair.
Should be interesting. And also, what are the new portfolios? Minister for Seniors. That's That's totally something you come up with before an election, in my view.
Philomena Tassi.
I think it's a good thing that's happened, that it has happened, and it's probably taken a long time. How much is going to be accomplished for seniors, I don't really know. And I know Philomena Tassi was definitely there was a bit of a kerfuffle about her pro-life views and mm-hmm. how she was going to vote. But I mean, whatever, right? It's a new portfolio, so we'll see how that goes.
Well, yeah, and there's like seniors advocates who have come out and said, you know, that the real test is going to be if she has like a, you know, any kind of. If it's more than just sort of paying lip service to yeah. seniors, if there's actually
sitting around talking portfolio, or is it like we are going to build 100,000 units, right. and everybody would go, wow.
The other interesting thing is that we have a minister of international trade, and we have a minister of international trade diversification mm-hmm. now. So we have James Carr as the diversification, and Dominique LeBlanc as trade. Original recipe trade minister.
LeBlanc's internal trade? Is I forgot that right? Or?
No, international. I thought it was international trade.
Jim Carr's international trade.
He's also intergovernmental, which is maybe that's why your confusion.
Yeah, because I know Champagne, that international trade, I think has become international trade diversification. It was like rebranded or something.
Right.
Anyway, they're throwing it all in on trade, all levels of trade, whether between the provinces
right.
and other nations.
LeBlanc, of course, is like sort of like Justin Trudeau's most trusted person.
They were personal friends growing up. I know yeah. that for a fact. So that he's like a buddy for sure.
So he has a friend like on the inside besties. With trade stuff as yeah. you know, we're dealing with Trump. And then Carr, who's going to be looking at other markets other than the United States.
The diversification part of it, plus with the Brexit going on and
right.
all the other
stuff. And of course, this comes as I think it was yesterday, Donald Trump said, oh, we might get a deal with Mexico first, and then we'll get a deal with Canada, which is bizarre because I think Mexico has been the most vocal about it being like a trilateral agreement.
Yeah.
They have an even further to the left person now in charge of Mexico. So I'm not sure trade is high on the new president's list of priorities.
I'm sure it is.
Especially not bilateral trade, though. Because I can't imagine that he's going to undo all that work so far. But you also have Wilbur Ross out there, you know, today talking about, oh, I think we're close to some trade agreements. It's like, really? That's not the news that comes out of the Washington end anytime this comes up.
Right.
So, I mean, it is kind of shrewd that you have someone who's, you know, overseeing trade and someone who's looking for other opportunities elsewhere. What else have we got?
It's not an extensive list, but yeah, it was quite a list. Melanie Joly moved from heritage to tourism, official languages, and la francophonie. So she went from a single thing to three.
And that's not necessarily a demotion.
I saw a couple of things that hinted that it was a demotion somehow. But
I mean, there's been stuff where she hasn't been...
Hit the bar.
Yeah. I mean, the stuff about like local news and... There was that. I mean, I don't think that's been as successful as they would have liked, and I think there are a lot of people who are still concerned about what that's going to look like in the future. Amarjeet Sohi is the Minister of Natural Resources, which is now a solo portfolio. But it seems like it's all about underlining that the importance of pipelines, of course.
The pipeline portfolio.
Because the government's going solo, all in on... Kinder Morgan. So I guess maybe that's important to have someone wholly dedicated to that.
To beat on in question period. Yeah.
Yeah. Mary Ning is the Minister of Small Business. That's an interesting pick because she was just elected last year.
Yeah, she was a staffer that became an MP, right?
Yeah, but she represents Markham Thornhill, which is in the GTA and probably a riding you want to hold on to if you're thinking about the election. And, you know, there's a ton of little, like Christy Duncan's now the Minister of Sport, too, and Barda Shager from Waterloo, she's still the government... the leader of the house, I should say. So, I mean, she's gotten small business off her plate. I was a bit disappointed that Lloyd didn't get anything. I mean, I didn't have a thought that he was going to get something, but I think Guelph should be rewarded.
Yes, absolutely. they got their green MPP now.
I understand that because they kept the gender parity thing. It's 35 members of cabinet now, but they kept gender parity, which is good. I mean, and also tosses some cold water and it's like, well, what if you can't find enough women? Well, clearly there's enough women.
Oh, for sure.
Enough qualified women. But, and I realize Lloyd's an old white man, older white man. I don't want to offend him, but technically, you know, I do remember when the original cabinet was announced, he made the list on, like, I think it was the Globe and Mail or the Financial Post or something.
Ones who could
have also fit into cabinet, and he could have been the small business. I think that was the position they had him lined up for. But I feel like the Liberal Party is kind of taking Guelph a bit for granted because you know, we were a beachhead for the party.
Yeah.
And for 4 years, things were gone, you know, quote unquote, up the, you know, wire.
We were the only red seat in a sea of blue at one point there. Right?
Yeah.
So, part of it too, I think.
Give us a reward.
Yeah. Where's my rewards card?
Where's our elephant?
I think part of it is to do with the working out not just gender parity, but the regional representation part of it as well. When you see, like, what was his name? Jonathan Wilkinson, who's from Vancouver with the Coast Guard. You need, obviously, somebody on a coast, but the idea of the cabinet is that it stretches from all the seas.
Yeah.
I didn't want to say sea to sea to sea. And the best was because I watched the reveal again because I had time, and the new Minister of Heritage and Multiculturalism name is Pablo Rodriguez, but of course Trudeau said Rodriguez like he was going to...
Like he was Speedy Gonzales.
Yeah, like it was a Taco Bell ad, which was really funny because, you know, you don't pronounce any of the other names from the country of origin, but it sounded...
I don't know.
Maybe Pablo Rodriguez is a bit of a character. I don't know. But it was just the way he said it. I was like, oh, really?
Anyway, I don't know.
It was funny.
I always somehow take up a French accent when I'm pronouncing a French name or word.
Yeah, but that's okay, right?
I know.
It's one of our languages, right? Yeah. And you don't want to butcher it, but at the same time, you want to say it right. But just the way he put this flourish into it. It doesn't matter. Anyway, he was the chief government whip, so... that has changed, I guess. And what are some of the other ones? I think we've covered most of the bases there.
Yeah, Scott Bryson's now also the Minister of Digital Government. And I think that's all the ones I made.
Because they're just going to digitize the government completely, right?
Well, it's, you know, how to keep people up to date and informed and feedback and all that. Blah, 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 whatever. No, it's important.
Who's in charge of Minister in charge of Phoenix payroll? Ooh, sorry.
Well, I mean, that's still an issue for sure. Yeah. I would hate to think we're at, like, this point next year and we're still talking about Phoenix Pay. I somehow suspect we will be. And I think that will probably be an election issue. But it's interesting to note that if this wasn't a huge shakeup, there were some very small moves, some very, like, clear moves in sort of dealing with the issues of the day, things like border security, things like trade diversification. I think what it shows is that the party is fairly comfortable with where they are going into what's going to be a probably contentious fall session. And then, you know, by the time we get after Christmas, the election's probably going to be all we're going to be talking about.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting how they're touting this shuffle as, you know, an election warm-up, and it's not till next October 2019. So,
well, this is like only the second real shuffle too. I mean, there's been like little moves, but I think the last one was just right after Trump got inaugurated.
And of course, as we know, like Freeland and Morneau kept their jobs. Like,
yeah, and McKenna.
They're not going anywhere yet.
So. McKenna, who goes to see Lauryn Hill and throw shade at Ford.
I didn't hear that.
But, well, she mentioned, like, oh, everything's coming up 90s, but Lauryn Hill still sounds great. Or I paraphrase that. But it is also worth noting that, what's his face? Doug Ford announced today that he's teaming up with Scott Moe to sue the federal government about not implementing carbon tax. So, good times.
That's definitely a fight to watch.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And which we will cover.
Oh, yeah.
Live here.
Live. Round by round coverage.
Ding, we need a bell. We need the bell sound like the final round. Ding.
Oh, I'm so sick of these final round references. No, I'm not. I wish it was still around. But
it's just once every 6 months.
All right.
We should start doing the final round here on this station.
We should get a little boxing ring set and make it happen. Or we could use the studio green screen. And, do it and just
have Ollie's and it's fighting it out in the background.
Yeah.
This is how things happen here.
All right, we're going to take a break and then start planning our YouTube series for the revival of the final round. You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM, Sufi.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We'll be right back with more open sources.
but everybody talking about heaven, they ain't going. In times like these, we need a miracle. Ain't nobody gonna save us. We're the ones we've been waiting for.
That was Reverend Seeker. I think probably one of the best shows I saw, and for a lot of people at Hillside this past weekend. That's from his new album, In Times Like These. He is an actual reverend. I thought some of these guys just sort of names him Reverend Doctor or whatever, but he is a rev. And I think his band was from Sweden or something. It was really, really interesting. So always something going on at the Hillside, and I think that'll be our last Hillside-ish song for a year, probably. But...
Promises. Yeah.
Good CD, though. Definitely check it out.
I did, when I brought up Lloyd in the last segment, it was also with the intention of mentioning that we will have Lloyd Longfield on the show on August the 16th. We have that confirmed up.
Excellent.
So, yeah, he's like going up north and stuff, so he's having a busy summer. But moving on to the West Side, in British Columbia, they are having a referendum, the long-promised referendum on electoral reform. It was part of the agreement between the BC NDP and the Green Party to to explore electoral reform. This is a bit complicated. It's a two-part ballot. It's going to be a mail-in ballot, too, so if you live in BC between... between October 22nd and November 30th, you will get a chance to look at your ballot, weigh your options, and mail it back in. But it's a two-part ballot, so the first question is, do you want to stay with First Past the Post, or do you want to move on to PR, and you choose either one or the other? And then, what kind of PR do you want if you want to move to PR? There is the... Oh, boy, the part of the episode where I try and read my handwriting. Dual member proportional representation, mixed member proportional representation, and rural-urban proportional representation. So I'm sure I might bungle this somewhat, but dual party or dual member, basically, they'll merge a lot of the different ridings. So that you can you'll basically be able to elect two people per riding. One is going to be like the representative who will be chosen by the most number of votes, and the other will be rewarded proportionally. A mixed member proportional, which some people may remember from 11 years ago, was a referendum on that here in Ontario, which is basically bigger ridings where there will be one representative, and then in order to fill out parliament or to fill out the legislature proportionally, there will be a list candidates, and that may be open for people to vote on from a set list, or it'll be up to parties to appoint.
Yeah, I think it's like a 60-40 split too.
Yep. And then the rural urban proportional, which would be kind of a mixed bag. If you live in an urban or semi-urban area, you would vote by single transferable vote, while people in more rural areas, well, it'll just be basically First Past the Post. So those are the options, and I think a lot of people are watching this pretty closely, because there are a lot of people who want to see or wanted the federal government to keep their promise about moving to PR, and if people in BC embrace it, then they're hoping it might catch fire nationwide.
From west to east.
Yeah.
Coast to coast to coast. The this is their third referendum in as many years. There was the one in... when was the first one? Was it 03, I think?
It was 05, I think.
05, where it was 58% said yes to some form of
PR. It was STV.
It was STV, and that came out of they had a citizens' assembly. It was actually quite an intense process where they had a bunch of people from BC and from various walks got together and said, what should we do? And they said, we decide this is the best system. So they set a 60% bar for that one. It wasn't a simple majority. It was 60%, and it just missed. Then in 2009, it was 61% came out against a change. Mm-hmm. So it was not the exact opposite, but that also had about 10% less of a turnout, maybe a little over than that. So 2005 was 61.5%. 5%.
But it's still a shift of like 20%.
Yeah. So it's both of those factors are probably. Now, in the middle of this, I found out that there's a constitutional challenge to this referendum from a group. It's a joint challenge from the Independent Contractors and Business Association and the Canada West Construction Union, who are what we call a yellow union in the business. They're not really a union. They just say they're. And they're arguing that the referendum is illegal and illegitimate and violated the Constitution. They're saying that it isn't really about, you know, the voting system you prefer. They're fighting it pretty hard. I just thought it was a really weird battle to pick. Like,
yeah, well, like, why are they...
Exactly. I don't know. Like, I think it's because it's the, you know, they like first past the post. They should just say that rather than, well, they're violating the Constitution. But well, yeah, I thought it was kind of a weird gang of people to go after this. But it seems like... So what had happened was there was a judge said, we're not going to expedite this process. You just have to wait. And it looks like the wait period will probably wait out. You know, the referendum will probably be happening by the time this even gets discussed again. Well, another one of their, and you said off the top, another one of their arguments is that the system is quote, too hard. And I think that's true when these things aren't really explained. We just sort of went through the three choices briefly. But I honestly think, and they should do, as groups like Fair Vote would tell you to do, is do your homework. Because these systems, I would think any of these three, in my opinion, are a hell of a lot more fair than first past the post in any description. It's like, you get this amount of votes, you get this amount of seats and representation, or not seats, you get this amount of rep. Like,
right.
It's so much better, and I don't know, there's just this anti, like, and it's interesting that they're offering the three choices. Like, so for the, so the first question is, yes or no, do you want this? And then from that, the runoff will be, okay, well, wait, what are we going to do?
And the government said they'll abide by whatever the decision is.
So it's the third time a charm for PR in BC. That's a question.
Well, clearly there's an appetite. If it wasn't for the 60% threshold in 2005,
they'd have this already.
This would be well, they would have single transferable vote anyway, which is not like people who are in favor of PR will tell you that's better than first past the post, but it's not the full PR, which is where they want to be. I think the DMP, for people who are looking for, you know, how to sell people on, you know, what's easiest and what people have an easier time adapting to, I think DMP, the dual member, would be the way to go. Because mixed member, I had issues with mixed member proportional when it came up here, and it had mostly to do with, like, we're going to give you lists of people who, like, the party will choose from, and they'll put, and I'm like, that doesn't make it more democratic.
No, it doesn't, but I think it's sort of what they do anyway. I mean, even though it would be from a list, like, the parties do that anyway, right?
To a degree.
They do, and it's, I think it's also that you may end up with a person that doesn't know your riding, but we see that a lot, too. Well, what was the talk this week of Jagmeet Singh running in Burnaby South, which is nowhere near his hometown? He's pretty much going to be a parachute candidate.
So Burnaby South is not Brampton.
It is definitely not Brampton. It's a long way. So that's the kind of thing. It's like, well, you know, does it matter whether the person is from the area? You'd think so. I mean, well, even in some ways, Elizabeth May is you know.
Oh, Elizabeth May,
definitely.
They love
her in Saanich Gulf Islands.
But I mean, it could be argued too, she's earned it.
Well, yeah, but it's like nowhere near her sphere of like where she did her time, which was in Nova Scotia, right? But
you know, we can make that argument about we can make that argument about Mike Schreiner too.
Well, sure. So then you argue it's like, well, okay, if you're just going to use a list, then why does it matter where somebody is from? Right.
I think at the end of the day, though, the voter sanctifies the candidate. So I think that makes the difference for me. It's like, yeah, somebody may come in. Like, I could run in Toronto, even though I've never lived in Toronto. But if people in that riding vote
want
for
you.
Me,
yeah.
Then that at least gives them, like, because I could be rejected. And it could be on the basis I'm not from that area I'm running in. But if the voters give approval, then that's...
Well, yeah. And that's
one thing.
That's the thing with MMP. When you have the list that's 40% when you're voting for the party, you can effectively, could be anybody on that list. They could all be from Toronto. They could all be from Winnipeg, right?
But I think the difference would be is if they were to provide the list before the vote, where if you're like, if I want to vote for person X to be the MPP or the MLA or whatever, and then they say, okay, for the Greens we have Joe Blow and Jane Doe and
Jimmy Schmo, yeah.
Alfred Molina. I'm just picking names out of my brain. Scott, and then the NDP, you have Scotty Hurts, and you have Oliver Rockside and Jan Hall. I'm just reviewing from the ballot box.
I'm on the list.
And you can say, okay, well, you know, if I get Greens, I might get, you know, Joe or Jane, somebody I like, or if I vote for NDP, you know, I don't like any of those people or what have you. But I my difficulty with MMP has always been like, okay, you vote for Greens, and we'll, you know, we'll pick somebody who'll sit for the Greens on your behalf, and
yeah,
that's
from the Beyond the Ballot Box party or whatever. Yeah, but I think if my guess is if people are going to pick anything, it'll probably be dual member, because it sort of preserves a little bit of first past the post, like what we're talking about.
It's also
about
easiest to explain,
and also because rank ballots to me make sense, but I mean, you really have to be like a political and somewhat of a mathy nerd to, like, you know, it's like you can choose one, you can choose three, you can choose seven. So you have to kind of, it's more like a lottery ticket where you're playing all these odds. Like, you know, is my eighth pick going to mean anything? Or, you know, because you're not
true,
required to pick all of the people, but it's like, there's three I really like, and then you rank
those.
There's four I really like.
I mean,
there's
a really good recent example of that, which was the PC leadership race, where a lot of people chose Caroline Mulroney and only chose Caroline Mulroney.
Yeah.
And that could have really made a difference for Christine Elliott.
Oh, and that's how it's done in ranked ballots, if you want one person.
So it's,
I have this discussion with people all the time in the community groups about how balloting's done. It's like, anyway, that's another story for another day. But
I would point out that there's a closer, more nearby experiment in PR, with London is having a referendum on whether to go to a ranked ballot system for the 2022 municipal election on their 2018 municipal election ballot, which is also a good segue to talk about our fourth topic, which is the municipal election campaign here in Guelph. And I'm going to refresh the candidates page on the Guelph
Votes website. Yeah, in case there's some new ones. Mine's printed, and it's like
Scotty prints.
While he's doing that
Scotty
again.
Scotty prints things.
I had to in this case. It's a long story.
But like, there's a new person for Ward 1, and Susan Carey, friend of the show, is running for the Upper Grand District School Board. But those are the two picks from today.
Because you had her tapped for council, and in your article, it's like,
well, I suggested she should run.
Who are the people in your neighborhood?
Yeah.
So,
because, I mean, she's accomplished. She's helped set up the Tool Library, and she does the Teitler market.
No, I think she's a great candidate.
She's qualified, I think. But
yeah, because the school, you said school board. Yeah, because the school board ones were a bit lightweight. It was just single. Some of them were, I think the Ward 1-5 one was empty for long time for Upper Grand.
I will say that
is it
at
two
least,
seats, by the way? Is
two
it
seats
yeah,
for
so
one
it's
and
like,
five.
It
yeah.
could be a claim.
So, well, all these, I mean, the school board races now have enough people so that they can all be acclaimed, at least. There might not be a race, but at least all those seats will be filled.
Because the French board is always just like one person. It's like the same person all the time.
Yeah.
Of the 300 French speakers in town.
But I think more problematic for people, Guelph people looking for what's going on, is the fact that we still have one candidate for mayor, and it's the man who's already the mayor.
Yes.
Mayor Cam Guthrie. Another friend of the show.
But, and we want to keep him a friend of the show. But.
Yeah, but our old friend Jerry Barker made some intonations last week that he was going to run, but instead he decided to start another advocacy organization. Not
grassroots. Yeah, people
Guelph,
love the manifestos from the mad bloggers, eh? Or should I say angry bloggers? I don't know. But yeah, it doesn't, to me personally, it doesn't, you can... I mean, because like, we both have blogs. Jerry's got a blog, and that's fine. But if you're going to do this sort of, you know, your list of demands that you want to nail to the wall of City Hall or whatever, don't say you're going to run or I'm thinking about it, and then don't do it. I mean, I got somebody was suggested that I should run, and I said I can't for X reasons, but I gave the reasons right away rather than, well, maybe. You know, the well maybes are what you leave for back and when things are announced, but no, it's not going to happen for me this time. I try and do other things. Like this show. I couldn't do this show if I ran for council is one thing. I love sitting here. And
Scotty's building a fence, people. He can't be bothered running for mayor right
I'm
now.
I'm on fence two, actually. I got stalled because I was coughing.
But
anyway, enough about me. What about the candidates? What's going on?
I wish he had run. I mean, there's still a week left. But
who, Jerry?
Yeah.
He may still. I mean, yeah, there's time, right?
But you know, it's. I think him and his supporters have a very clear idea of what they think local governments do. What I found interesting was in his post last week where he talked about the CAMETs, he seemed to be carving like a whole other subsection of council, because for the long time there's the Gang of Seven and everyone else, Gang of Seven being the loony left wing of the council, and then everybody else. But now there seems to be like a new faction, because he really seems to not like Cam.
Yeah, Cam's like a fiery socialist as far as Jerry's concerned now, right?
So now there's the Cam faction, there's the Gang of Seven, and I guess what's left for Jerry. And so this is why we have the No Frills action plan, which...
yeah, I wonder what No Frills the store thinks of...
I had that thought myself. It's like,
I guess, is No Frills a trade... I guess so.
It would have to be.
Well, sort of. I guess if it's written in that logo, it's No Frills the store as opposed to the No Frills.
But, you know,
I guess it's
like
better than the Best Buy action plan, right?
Like having an audit by the municipal.
Line by line. Did he say
ministry.
That?
No. Yeah, line by line.
How about that?
A full Shades audit, which is basically the same as line by line. But, I mean, that was the thing that grassroots Guelph wanted. I mean, maybe they might get it now with a different government in Queen's Park, but who knows?
What are you saying? They don't self-audit? I mean, they do audit, don't they? I don't know if it's line by line, but they do the books, right? This line by line stuff is always an implication
Oddly
that
enough,
there's something going
there
on.
There is
that shouldn't
a Guelph
be.
Politicast episode with the GM of Finance where she talks about how the budget is produced every year. So
and where can people find that?
You can
Adam?
Find that on Guelph Politico.
Definitely check it out. I'm going
so
to.
So it's
it.
From last September, October,
there
weeks
you
before
go.
The budget started.
It's all out there. There are no.
But
secrets.
He has things like make every effort to kill the hydro-electra merger, and it's like.
That is the only thing on his list that I agree with, but that's just me.
But can it be done? Because
no,
like, I mean, is that going to be like the thing where we have Doug Ford canceling all the green power contracts, and then oh no, we factored in the court costs, and you have green power company saying no, you didn't.
And then the Doug Ford cancellations, I think, are pretty vindictive. But it's probably too late to put the brakes on the Guelph Hydro thing. I think people have accepted it, except for Jerry, of course. So,
but then you also have things like freezing capital spending until there's a full review
Don't
of the finances.
Build anything. No libraries, no nothing.
Well, I mean, he's probably thinking about the library, but when you say capital spending, that includes the sewers and the roads and the sidewalks and the bus shelters.
And the potholes.
So, you know, we're not going to fix anything for like a year and a half. It's just, you know, he talks about like a new corporate structure,
but then this
ending
is the,
closed meetings. You know, I have a problem with closed meetings.
Yes, I know you do. So there's always something on a list like this that the grievance list that somebody will say, yeah, you know what, I actually agree with that.
But I wouldn't say never have another closed meeting again.
No.
Because I think
there's times where it has to happen.
There's times where it has to happen. I just wish the reporting was better.
But in my opinion, and Jerry's a known.
Yeah.
If he doesn't run or has somebody running on the No Frills plan, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything at all unless somebody's going to step up and do it. And I would be impressed if he does. I don't care who it is. If somebody steps up and runs on that, it's fine. Until then, it's just squawking. Squawking.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention a couple of things beyond Jerry, just because we were stuck for time. There's some interesting candidates in the area. Catherine McGarry.
Oh, yeah, she's my
friend of the show,
mayor of Cambridge.
Former MPP, and she was the North Dumfries Transport Minister. She's running for mayor of Cambridge, which supposedly isn't a surprise. And another name that shook loose when I was surfing around this week, Blaine Lastman for Toronto,
son of
Mel, bad boy Lastman, a.k.a. nobody. Of course, you know who that is. It says he's been approached by, you know, it's the usual, well, people have asked me, I shouldn't run. So, yeah, I don't know what his
I mean, that was problematic because I saw that and I'm like, oh, did he announce? No, he didn't announce.
No, he's just,
it's a big exclusive by CTV News.
Well, it's exclusive, but then, of course, he's waiting for the, you know, the onslaught of supportive things and then he'll probably do it. But, you know, so people are saying he's going to run. So, odds are good that he will.
It's problematic all over that there aren't, like, serious contenders. I'm not including Catherine McGarry in that. I find it interesting because anytime I see Doug Craig on TV, it's like he's fed up with everything. I'm sure he's fairly invested in being mayor of Cambridge, but like he seems bored by everything whenever I see him in a TV interview. But Barry Verbanowicz in Kitchener still running unopposed.
Oh, yeah.
Dave Jaworski in Waterloo, he does have three. He does have two challengers. One is a former city employee or a current city employee who kind of comes from the Jerry school of municipal thought.
Now, if I got it right, if you're a city employee, don't you have to like take a leave from your job to run?
Probably.
There's lots of positions where you can't. It's like if you're a judge or if you have a direct relationship with a. I think the only one that you can officially run is if you're a city councilor. And then you can't run for a couple of things. I think some people are.
I don't know if she's a current employee, but if she was, I would imagine that's the case.
Yeah.
And then even in Toronto, like Blaine Lastman would be at least someone with like some sort of cachet running against Ron Torrey, who's right now running against 19 other people. But I mean, and there are like homeless advocate Kevin Clark.
Oh, Kevin Clark, of course.
And then
is Harold the jewelry buyer running as well?
Not yet. But then you also have whack job James Sears, who's Dr. James Sears, who is of course the man behind Your Ward News.
Yeah, I thought that's when you said that name.
Yeah.
Isn't he in jail or?
Well, he clearly, maybe he's going to run Toronto from jail. I don't know, but he's
56 votes.
But I mean, amongst his platform items is that he's going to end that pride. He calls it like disgusting pride or whatever. But it's War News is fairly well known for its, not for its anti-Marxist views, which is how Sears bills himself, but for its racist views, which is how everybody else sees it.
So anybody that's doing a web page for their running the election shouldn't use Ward News in any capacity in their description. But it's not too late. There's a week left. What's the cutoff? The deadline is 27th July at 2 p.m. If you're planning to run, just do it, okay?
Just do it, yeah.
Don't just hum and haw and print your manifesto online and
well, I'll tell
in
you what,
underwear.
I wrote a piece a couple of weeks ago about the Cam running unopposed. And I said in an offhand line, like, he's done an admirable job. It's like, depending on,
he's well liked.
You may have political disagreements, but he's acquitted himself well in the office, which was where I was going with admirable. But someone emailed me and said, oh, he's done an admirable job. Really? And I was like, well, clearly you missed the other 799 words in that piece where I tried to say, if you don't like Cam, and there are people who don't like Cam or what he's done. I mean, aside from Jerry, but there are people who don't like what he's done in office. Then run yourself. And there was somebody on Reddit who was like, can't like the local riding associations like develop some candidates? Like, no, because there's no partisan politics in local. It's everybody's
yeah, there
independent.
Is, but it's hands off, right?
It's well, it's like partisan in terms of are you left? Are you right? Are you center?
Yeah.
But, that's not the way it swings.
No.
And we
should be able to have municipal parties like in BC, but that's just my opinion. But a topic for another day. But the clock is ticking. Tempest fugit.
Yes, you're right.
We can go madly.
Somebody out there, we have a city of 130,000 people. Someone else must want to be mayor. Anyway. not to say that we want Cam to lose, but I mean, we need to have healthy competition in our democracy.
That's right. So step up. Don't just talk
about it. And if Cam
it.
Wants to be mayor for another 4 years, he should be challenged by someone who has other ideas too. That's all we're saying. You can stay connected to Open Sources all week long at our website, opensourcesguelph.com. Find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire and go to OS_Guelph to find us on Twitter. You can find also the Guelph Politicast channel where you can find episodes of Open Sources Guelph on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. You can find me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and a blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com.
And we have a rerun of DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour. She's on summer vacation.
Lucky.
Some of us have news to cover, nonstop news to cover. But DJ Sounds Good to Me, repeat at the top of the hour here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We'll be back here live next Wednesday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources.
Thursday.